ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवति उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी कृष्णे स्वधामोपगते धनमज्ञानादिभिः सह कलौ नष्टतृषाम् एष पुराणार्कोऽधुनोदितः ग्रन्थराज श्रीमद्भागवतम् कैंटो 6 चैप्टर 1 टेक्स्ट Number 46. This is our continuing of the history of the life of Ajamila. Please repeat.
Yatha
iha
deva pravaraha trevidhyam upalabhyate bhuteshu guna vaichitryat tatha अन्यत्र अनुमीयते यथेह देव प्रवरास् त्रैविध्यम् उपलभ्यते भूतेषु गुणवैचित्र्यात् तथान्यत्र अनुमीयते यथेह देव प्रवरास् त्रैविध्यम् उपलभ्यते भूतेषु गुणवैचित्र्यात् तथान्यत्राणुमीयते यथेह देव प्रवरास् त्रैविध्यम् उपलभ्यते भूतेषु गुणवैचित्र्यात् तथान्यत्राणुमीयते
Yatha, just as, iha, in this life, deva pravaraha, O best of the demigods, traivithyam, three kinds of attributes, upalabhyate, are achieved, bhutesho, among all living entities, Gunavaichitriyat, because of the diversity of the contamination of the three modes of nature, Tatha, similarly, anyatra, in other places, anumiyate, it is inferred. Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, founder and acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. O best of the demigods, we can see three different varieties of life, which are due to the contamination of the three modes of nature. The living entities are thus known as peaceful, restless, and foolish, as happy, unhappy, or in between, or as religious, irreligious, and semi-religious. We can deduce that in the next life, these three kinds of material nature will similarly act. Please repeat. O best of the demigods, we can see three different varieties of life, which are due to the contamination of the three modes of nature. The living entities are thus known as peaceful, restless, and foolish, as happy, unhappy, or in between, or as religious, irreligious, and semi-religious. We can deduce that in the next life, these three kinds of material nature will similarly act. Report. The actions and reactions of the three modes of material nature are visible in this life. For example, some people are very happy, some are very distressed, and some are in mixed happiness and distress. This is the result of past association with the modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. Since these varieties are visible in this life, we may assume that the living entities, according to their association with the different modes of material nature, will be happy, distressed, or between the two, and their next lives also. Therefore, the best policy is to dissociate oneself from the three modes of material nature and be always transcendental to their contamination. This is possible only when one fully engages in the devotional service of the Lord. As Krishna confirms in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 14, text 26, Mam trayo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. One who engages in full devotional service, who does not fall down under any circumstance, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the spiritual platform. Unless one is fully absorbed in the service of the Lord, one is subject to the contamination of the three modes of material nature and must, therefore, suffer from distress or mixed happiness and distress. Om Jnana Timirantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunyatam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama Shri Chaitanya Monobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Gada Mahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guruho
Shri Yuta Pada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sabadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpadarukhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Yatheha Deva Pravaras Trividhyam Upalabhyate Bhuteshu Guna Vaichitriyat Tatha Anyatra Anumyate. O best of the demigods, we can see three different varieties of life which are due to the contamination of the three modes of nature. Living entities are thus known as peaceful, restless, and foolish, as happy, unhappy, or in between, or as religious, irreligious, and semi-religious. We can deduce that in the next life, these three kinds of material nature will similarly act. Without getting too far ahead, I'll read the next verse because it's very closely related. It's an example of this point. Just as springtime in the present indicates the nature of springtimes in the past and future, so in this life of happiness, distress, or a mixture of both, gives evidence concerning the religious and irreligious activities of one's past and future lives. Nothing is new. Nothing is new. Everything has been going on forever. There's nothing new at all. We talk often about modernity versus tradition. But actually, there's nothing new. All the ideologies that harass us in the modern world and color our consciousness in so many ways and impel us to surrender to the three modes of material nature, they've been around for a long, long time. What is the proof? Vijayadvaja Tirtha, in his commentary on this verse, points out that this verse responds to the doubt that is expressed by a class of materialistic philosophers known as Lokayatas. They're headed by Charvaka Muni. And Srila Prabhupada often quotes a verse by Charvaka Muni, which says, Rinam kritva kritam pibet. If you have to go into debt, then do it, but somehow get your ghee. Yava jivet sukham jivet. As long as you're going to be alive, you should live well. Live happily. Why? Bhasmi bhutasya dehasya punar agamanam kutaha. He's asking a rhetorical question. This body is going to be destined to be ashes at some point. So who knows what's next? Who knows if you're coming back or not? Or how do you know? Kutaha. Where do you get this idea? This is a rhetorical question that we're going to answer in this class. But this is the default position. This is entry-level Krishna consciousness. This is the automatic mindset of the modern age. All you have to do is be born and socialized, in modern society, and you will have this idea and ideal, both. The notion is there, and the ideal is also explicit or implicit. So, what do we do? There are trivijjam. A few words here in this verse, they're very significant. One of them is trivijjam. Trivijjam means threefold. What's threefold? Upalabhyate, what you get. What we see in this life. And threefold has not been defined in the verse. Srila Prabhupada defines it in 9 ways in his translation, doesn't he? This is based on the commentary of Sridhar Swami. Srila Prabhupada's translation is not literal. It's incorporating elements that Sridhar Swami has explained in his commentary. That's why we have this idea of trivijjam, or threefoldness, explained in many ways. Srila Prabhupada gives us 3 groups of 3. What are they? You can be in this life happy, or you can be distressed, or you can be somewhere in between. In fact, something Vidura observes in the 3rd canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in I believe it's chapter 7, text 17, he says, Yascha murhatamo loke. In this world, there are those who are completely foolish. Murhatama means the most foolish. They're totally covered over. He says those people are happy because they're completely oblivious. They have no idea what's going on. I mean, of course, that happiness won't last. They will find out the hard way. They will be very rudely awakened from their salubrious dream of material life. So then he says, the other kind of person who is happy is yascha buddhe paramgata, that person whose intelligence has passed beyond reason. That person is also happy. In other words, a liberated soul, he's also happy. Now the problem is this: tau ubhau sukham etete klishyati antarito janaha. The person who has to suffer is the person who's somewhere in between these two. And that's us. We're not completely self-realized, and we're not completely out of it either. We have some idea what's going on, therefore we suffer. So intelligence makes you suffer. That's why some people just drown their intelligence in what? Check out chapter 4, text number 10 of the Bhagavad Gita, and read Srila Prabhupada's purport very carefully, at least 3 or 4 or 5 times. You'll see that there's a great deal of repetition in that purport, and he's focusing on 3 things that Krishna says keep us from surrendering. Anybody know what that verse is and what those 3 things are? Raga, bhaya, krodha. Attachment, fear, and anger. Attachment, we know. We all have our attachments. Fear. And Srila Prabhupada does not define fear in the same way that the 11th canto defines fear. Bhayam dvitiya bhinaveshatasya isharapetasya viparyayo smriti. Krishna tells, or 11th canto says, that a person is blessed with fear as his constant companion once he makes the decision to turn away from God or to entertain something non-Krishna in this world. Then you have to deal with material fear. What is that fear? You don't know what the next problem is going to be, but you know there's going to be a problem. Just as there have been springtimes every year for the last billions and trillions of eons, similarly we know that there's going to be springtime next year. And similarly we know that we're going to suffer, but we don't know what it is, and therefore we're afraid. But that's not what Prabhupada is talking about in chapter 4, text 10. What fear does he address instead? Spiritual fear. Fear of your spiritual identity, and particularly fear that you are eternally a person. Because our whole experience in this world is that our relationships invariably have problems. They don't work. And so when presented with the idea that I'm going to be in a relationship forever, we have second thoughts. We have some doubts. So this is something to consider. Prabhupada says in that same purport that therefore people sometimes, they've heard so many things, they're so confused about what's going on, they just don't want to deal with it. And what do? They drown their intelligence in intoxication or something similar. Intoxication literally or figuratively, they just turn off reality and become submerged in their dream until they wake up rudely. That is modern society, because it's Kali Yuga, and this is what we do in this yuga. This is our default mode of operation. So most of us are in between that and self-realization. And we're the ones who are aware of the suffering and aware that there's something wrong here. There's got to be a better way. So these are the persons that are being addressed here. Now, the Yamadutas are speaking that we have people who are peaceful, restless, and foolish. Peaceful comes from what mode of nature? Shanta. Sridhar Swami glosses this as Shanta, Ghora, and Mudhatva. Peaceful, intense, maybe is another way to put it, and stupid, Mudha. So Shanta means Sattva Guna. Just like where I live, there's always a cow there looking happily at the world, and pretty much she's always happy. No real problem. She doesn't offend anyone. She doesn't make a big scene. She's just there, and she's usually pretty satisfied. Therefore, the cow is considered to be sattvic, sattva-guna, relatively speaking. Although animals are usually considered to be mudha in the mode of ignorance. So ghora means intense or frenetic or heavy or suffering. Because what is the result of rajaguna? Distress. You have to suffer. And what kind of distress do you have to suffer? Pretty heavy stuff comes down in this material world. If you haven't experienced it yet, you can either wait or you can read the news, but not too much. The world is, sometimes we wonder how things can go on with the current trajectory. But anyway, therefore he says, also Sridhar Swami, Shanta Ghora Mudhatvenava, that's one option. Another option is Sukha Dukha Mishratvenava. You can be happy, you can be disturbed, you can be somewhere in between. Or Dharmikatvadina va. You can be religious or implicitly irreligious or somewhere in between. These are the three things that have been mentioned here by Srila Prabhupada in his purport. So then it comes to something very interesting. Actually, this principle, the verse here and what's being presented here, Gunavaichitriyat, it is because of the colorfulness, the manifoldness, the variegatedness of these three modes of material nature. We heard yesterday, 3 times 3 is?
9.
9 times 9 equals? 81. 81 times 81? You've got to be pretty sharp to know that one. But you get the idea. The life becomes very complicated because we latch onto a particular mode or a particular combination of modes of nature and we don't let go because of attachment, because of ignorance. And this actually impels us to behave in ways that create our next life for us. And we can understand. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he says quite explicitly, Sattvadi guna sanga pratyakshamevo palabhyadam ityahu. What he's telling us here in this verse, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, is that you should open your eyes and look around, see the variety of this world, and understand that it comes from sattva gunadi vaichitriyam. It comes from these different modes, beginning with sattva guna. Mix of these modes, complicated mix of these modes of material nature. So we can deduce that this is going on in the next life as well. Now, anyatra, the word anyatra is used here. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur glosses that in two ways also. It means either in the next birth, or in another birth at least, or it means in some other world, because there are both kinds of existence, isn't it? Anyatra simply means elsewhere. But elsewhere means what? In New York City? Is Krishna consciousness applicable in New York City also, or no? Yes, it is, because it's absolute truth. Not everything is universally applicable in this world. That's where we come into the complexity of guna-vaichitryam, the manifoldness or the variegatedness of these modes of nature. That is why Klaus Klostermeyer, famous scholar and friend of ISKCON, has written in one of his textbooks on Hinduism that the Dharma Shastra comprises the single most voluminous body of writing that exists in the Sanskrit language. Because the Dharma Shastra attempts to take these pure ideals, these spiritual principles, and apply them at ground level reality to a specific time, place, and circumstance. And that gets very, very complicated. We don't even agree on how to apply Krishna consciousness, do we? Sometimes devotees have. So actually, the next thing that this verse brings us to is a discussion of pramana. Pramana. What does pramana mean? Evidence, a fancy Latin word for the same thing is epistemology. That's a philosophical term that means, how do you know what you know? How do you really know things? And we know that there are basically three pramanas in our line. What are those? Pratyaksha, anumana, and shabda. Pratyaksha means what you see. And it's interesting because both Vijayadwaj Tirtha and even Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in their commentaries on these verses, they have used this very word, pratyaksham. You can see for yourself this all this variety. That proves that guna-vaichitryat, we're being impelled by these different modes. It actually doesn't prove anything because the senses do not think. Therefore, Sridhar Swami, in his commentary, he fine-tunes it. What does he say? He says something very interesting. Na kevalam suryadaya eva dharma dharma gyapakaha. It's not just Surya and all the rest who are aware of a person's dharma and adharma. Who are this Surya and all the others? Demigods, but specifically there's a list been recently mentioned. 13 witnesses of everything that we do. So he's saying it's not just these guys who are seeing everything that you do. And he's writing this in an age before Facebook. Because Facebook is also seeing everything that you do. And it's been confirmed by Robert Snowden that your smartphone is actually a sophisticated surveillance device that happens to be able to make phone calls. You're being tracked, and not just by the demigods. You're being tracked by somebody who wants what you have, or wants to use you for what he or she wants. This is the modern age. And it's so fine-tuned. Anybody know about the Internet of Things? What they call the Internet of Things. If you go to Singala agencies near Radhe Dham and buy a new appliance, that appliance may have embedded within it an internet connectivity device that literally keeps track of your dirty laundry. Because things are being manufactured in this way. They collect data, you know, especially, as I said, smartphones and such things, so it's very easy with those. It's a little harder with other appliances. But they're being built like this to keep tabs on everything that you're doing. And it's not just the government. We always like to blame our governments, but it's not the governments, because governments are irrelevant in the modern day and age. Even a sociologist from the University of Chicago named Arjuna Appadurai, he has said decades ago that the nation-state paradigm is a has-been concept. It no longer has much relevance. And one scholar in Santa Barbara said that the new superpower is the transnational corporate class. They're not constricted by anything so troublesome as a constitution. And in whose court are you going to try them? They're everywhere. Anyway, I don't want to get too much off track here, but Sridhar Swami does make this point. Na kevalam suryadaya eva dharma dharma kyavakaha. It's not just these 13 witnesses or the whole host of demigods for that matter. It's your friends and people around you, your friends and your enemies. Because human nature doesn't change. And it's human nature that creates these things. This is the point. Therefore, again, as we said in the beginning, nothing is new. These ideologies keep reincarnating themselves along with the people who perpetrate them. So the Vijayadvajtirtha is pointing out, rightly so, this verse is actually addressing the damage that has been done by Charvak Muni and so many others, before him and also after him, in the future as well. They will stay here. This world is meant for them. But that's not his main point. His main point is kintu, but arthapatir atitya ityahu. He's telling us that you have to apply what is called arthapati. What is arthapati? Anybody knows philosophy? Arthapati means, as Prabhupada translates here, deduction. What you deduce, or anumiyate, it is inferred. Postulation. Now, traditionally in philosophical circles, there are two kinds of arthapati. One is arthapati based on pratyaksha, what you've seen, drishta arthapati. The other one is shruta arthapati. Has anyone ever heard speculation based on guru sadhu shastra? This is a term that we find bandied about sometimes in ISKCON. You know, we have our extrapolation based on something that's has a modicum of authority, something which is heard. Because we all know that hearing is more authoritative than seeing. Pratyaksha pramana is more authoritative than, shabda pramana is more authoritative than pratyaksha pramana. But arthapati, although it's a separate category in Mimamsa philosophy and also in Advaitavad, Mayavad, we don't actually recognize it as a separate category because it's just a function of what we call anuman. I was in South India last winter and someone gave me a book written by Jayatirtha Acharya in our disciplic succession after Madhvacharya. That book is called Pramana Paddhati. And in this book I was surprised to notice that he says a little bit about pratyaksha in the beginning, and he says a little bit about shabda in the end. But most of the book is dedicated to anuman. Why? Because it's not so easy to understand what we hear. We have to hear from our spiritual master, and we have to make sure that we understand what we hear. We understand the instruction. We understand the context in which that instruction was given. We even understand the context of how that instruction was received by our own spiritual master. These things are important. Therefore, in the 11th canto, Krishna is telling Uddhava, not three, but four. Because sometimes we find, even you're using pratyaksha and it's not enough. Even you're using anuman or arthapati, as it's being stated here, and it's not enough. Even you're using shabda, and still there is some disagreement. So what does Krishna say to Uddhava? Anybody know? If you've heard my lectures before, you might have a clue. I'll quote the verse. He says, Shruti pratyaksham aiti hyam anumanam chatushtayam pramaneshva anavasthanat vikalpa savirajyate. He says, you can understand what is true and false in this complicated world by four pramanas. One of them is shruti, that means shabda pramana. The other one is anumana, that means arthapati and other aspects of speculation or conjecture. The other one is Shabda, Anumana, and Pratyaksha, what you see. But the fourth one is Aitihya. Aitihya means history. In legal circles, they call this legal precedent. It has the force, traditionally speaking, in the world of Dharma Shastra and in the world of philosophical discourse, including the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. It has the status of a separate entity, a separate pramana. It has authority. You can refer to tradition, and it is as authoritative as referring to Shruti. But there are some qualifications on that, of course. That's a complex matter which has been described at length in the shastras that are dedicated to dealing with what you should do and what you should not do. Those are particularly those commentarial traditions stemming from the Purva Mimamsa Sutras. But that's a little bit academic. It's enough for us to know or to recognize what we heard yesterday from Rohini Sutta Prabhu, which is that Krishna says in chapter 16 of the Bhagavad Gita, anybody know the verse I'm thinking of? It's the whole passage is very nice, but in particular it's text 24. He says, Tasmat chastram pramanam te karya karya vijanataha. You should discriminate what to do and what not to do on the basis of what the shastra says. Gyatva shastra vidhan uktam karma kartam iharhasi. You should do your karma, you should do your duty, that is dharma, based on what is enjoined in the shastra. Shastra vidhan. Vidhan means vidhi. If you don't do this, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, you are likely to become, even if you do it, still there's a danger that you will become snagged in the process of sense gratification and you will not get to samadhi. Samadhau na vidhiyate. What does vidhiyate mean? It means basically the same thing as upalabhyate. It doesn't happen. But literally vidhi, what does vidhi mean? A rule, an injunction. Everything in life is covered by an injunction. In the Mimamsa school they say this explicitly. There's nothing in the Vedas but injunctions. You see? So a life based on injunction is very difficult for the modern mind to even imagine. Therefore he uses this word, Sridhar Swami, kalpyante. We have to imagine what's being stated here. Through Arthapati, what does he say? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also. He says here, yeah, Sridhar Swami says, anumiyate trividhyanyatha anupapatya kalpyante. We have to imagine what's going on. Because we can't see it with our senses and we may not even be able to figure it out through speculation. But the idea here is that Krishna says one should live life in terms of injunctions only. That means there's two ways to look at this. One way to look at it is that you don't do anything unless it's expressly enjoined in the shastra. The other way is that you can do anything you want as long as it's not expressly prohibited in shastra. Therefore, we find that in the shastra, usually both bases are covered. When there's a positive injunction, there's also a negative prohibition. When we get initiated into Krishna consciousness, we're given positive orders and negative orders. What are those? Positive side, you chant your rounds. Negative side, you do not break the four regular principles. It's scientific. If you do this, you see the results. You remain enthusiastic. You remain spiritually healthy. You advance. If you don't do it, you don't advance. So all of life is like this. And all of life is actually governed by shastric conjunction. That is the world of Dharma Shastra. And that is why it is so complex. Because of Guna Vaichitriyat. We are stated. Gunavaichitriyat, because of the complexity of these interactions of the three modes of material nature. So sometimes, particularly with regard to the order of the spiritual master, that we have to follow these things within the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, sometimes there are a number of doubts raised about that. His Holiness Shivaram Swami recently, in last month, as a matter of fact, addressed the GBC about this point, and he brought up some of these doubts that are sometimes expressed. Well, it's not practical, or it's external to Krishna consciousness, or so many of them we've heard. You can search for him in the internet and probably find it there to hear more details. But the point is, I think, something that Srila Prabhupada has very nicely explained in his Bhagavad Gita purport to chapter 3, text number 31. There Srila Prabhupada is talking about this. As you know, the first, say, five chapters of Bhagavad Gita are largely about karma yoga. Karma yoga simply means dharma. So Prabhupada says, actually Krishna says, those persons who execute their duties according to my injunction and who follow this teaching faithfully, without envy, become free from the bondage of fruitive actions. To this, Srila Prabhupada explains, the injunction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna is the essence of all Vedic wisdom and is therefore eternally true, without exception. As the Vedas are eternal, so the truth of Krishna consciousness is also eternal. One should have firm faith in this injunction without envying the Lord. There are many philosophers who write comments on the Bhagavad Gita but who have no faith in Krishna. They will never be liberated from the bondage of fruitive action. But an ordinary man with firm faith in the eternal injunctions of the Lord, even though unable to execute such orders, becomes liberated from the bondage of the law of karma. In the beginning of Krishna consciousness, one may not fully discharge the injunctions of the Lord, but because one is not resentful of this principle and works sincerely without consideration of defeat and hopelessness, he will surely be promoted to the stage of pure Krishna consciousness. Because that's what Varnashram Dharma is intended to do. That's what the order of the spiritual master is intended to do. It's intended to promote us to pure Krishna consciousness. So we should be very careful. As I said, there are many ideologies floating about the world and floating about ISKCON, and some of them are envious. Some of them are valid, some of them are not valid. All of them are eternal, as I said in the beginning. They all keep coming back, along with the people who want to believe in them. And so it's a problem that has to be addressed in the Shastra, and therefore it is addressed in the Shastra, in verses like this one. You may not see everything. You have to reason. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, let me back up. First of all, Jiva Goswami explains, what is this arthapatti that Sridhar Swami is referring to, the inference, or that this verse is referring to? He says, anumiyate matyairapi, Jiva Goswami says. That means, anumiyate means it is measured or calculated or inferred. Means you have to use your intelligence, mati, matya, by using your intelligence. So that doesn't really help us so much, because do we use our intelligence to speculate? No. Therefore, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur clarifies any remaining doubt about this. He says, anumiyante shastra drishyaiva iti bhava. The idea here is that mati, or intelligence, or tapati, is based on shastra drishti, the vision of shastra, shastra chakshu. Tasmat shastram pramanante ityadi. As Vyasadeva has written for us in Vedanta Sutra, Shastra Yonidvat. Everything comes from Shastra, ultimately. But not everything is explicit in Shastra. That's why we have this verse, in which the Yamadutas are explaining that sometimes you have to extrapolate. Any questions or comments on any of this? I know it's a little late. There's one here. Microphone is ready.
No.
He gave it to someone else. Okay, there you go. Sorry. Elderly persons go first.
The author of this artwork himself avoided these conditions by taking assurance from the Lord that Maya will not touch. For others, dharma sabati vati vaikitra mahajana vato.
Yes. Yeah, I'm not... I'm having trouble hearing the first part of your question, but I heard the Mahabharata quote that you gave. Can you maybe repeat it or have someone else paraphrase it? I had trouble following your accent. Sorry.
You said that Sukadeva Goswami also wanted confirmation from Lord Krishna.
I'm repeating.
Okay.
At the time of birth, when he was not coming from the womb of his mother,
yes,
he got an assurance from the Lord himself,
yes,
that Maya will not touch him.
Yes.
In this way, he could avoid the three modes of nature. But for others who cannot get this type of assurance, then dharmasya vodhi vodhi vaichitra.
Yeah, very
good. Cannot determine the dharma correctly. So the only option is available with us, Mahajana Bhagavad
Gita. This is the standard answer. Not everybody can expect an honorary degree from the university. Some people get them, very rare people. Most of us have to go through the hard work. And similarly, as you were saying, the Dharma Shastra is for the ordinary persons, for the antarito janaha, the person in between the self-realized soul and the hopeless fool. That's us. We are the persons who are enjoined by Shastra to act in certain ways according to certain conventional standards. Now, there are many arguments, even amongst those kinds of Shastras. This has been pointed out in the Mahabharata verse that you quoted. Therefore, the ultimate conclusion is, yes, you have to follow the Mahajana. That means for us, Srila Prabhupada, or of course there are 12 Mahajanas, of which Yamaraj is also one Mahajana, you see? But even we're following Srila Prabhupada, we still sometimes have disagreements. This is where, in my opinion, this IT hymn is very important, as a fourth pramana, or not exactly fourth, it's a subset of shabda, you can say, but it's a very practical one, because it shows you, this is what your predecessors have done. So you do that. This is the explicit injunction of the Manusmriti. When there is any doubt as to what is dharma and what is not dharma, a person should follow that which their ancestors have followed as and have understood to be dharma. That assumes that your ancestors are dharmic. And in modern day and age, it's becoming less and less so. Okay, there was another question here. Srila Prabhupada and many others also, they are not hesitant to appeal to Anuman. Even in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna appeals to other or other sorts of mundane incentives. He's telling Arjuna, Maranarati Richyate, what could be worse than having your good name sullied by the laughter of so many kshatriyas who think that you're a coward? That's not really a philosophical approach either. So, you know, yena kena prakarena manaha krishna niveshayat. One can adopt, other means of engaging one in devotional service, but the end result should be that the person engages in devotional service. This is the acid test. Here the Yamadutas are appealing to reason, the commentators are appealing to reason, but that reason has to be qualified. It must be based in Shastra. It must be based in what we've heard. And I've also added to that there should be an element of authority invested in that interpretation, and that authority is objective and pre-existing. Is that okay?
Yeah. First of all, you're saying is that in that discussion with somebody, there will have to be some unbiased standard of objective truth that you both have to agree to.
Yeah, the problem of the modern world is that nobody accepts that there is such a thing as an absolute truth. We're living in a post-structuralist world in which people don't even believe in any sort of structure in anything at all. So it's chaos. And yes, that's the problem. That is exactly why Srila Prabhupada was pushing so heavily in his later years on Varnashram Dharma, because it very explicitly and practically introduces the principle of order into one's life. And that order is also invested with divine authority. That may be a hard pill to swallow. The inaction of the majority of the members of our society on this point for the last four or so decades maybe attests to that. But, you know, it's only going to get worse as long as we ignore the problem. This is the thing. One God brother told me, you only get more of whatever you tolerate. Is that okay? We have to engage people in a way that they are comfortable, but we also have to make sure that they're being elevated and not that we are being diluted. This is the main concern. Okay?
The second question has to do with it. This is not a political question by any means. It's really a means of trying to understand the truth in a situation. I came across a recent discussion with somebody who said to me that, very emphatically, that, you know, Sri Prabhupada has created a management structure for our society. And so it
created a natural structure.
A management structure. For our society. So following that management structure is synonymous with following Sri Prabhupada, and refusal to follow that management structure is analogous to not following Sri Prabhupada. And the argument I gave in return was, well, that may be the external environment Prabhupada has created to deal with the inner spirit of Krishna consciousness, which is what? You know, pure devotional service rather than Krishna. So one may find that the management structure may not be conducive to the development of his inner spirit.
Given the changed context.
So given the argument like that, that the person said, well, the inner spirit can be, it is fed by the mercy of the Guru Parampara. So how can one say that, well, I will nourish my inner spirit if I'm not serving the Guru Parampara? So I got a little bewildered, and I was wondering what you think about the situation. Like, first of all, because it seems to me that the main argument is, well, we would have to first determine what is the structure that Prabhupada intended. Because anybody could say, well, this is what Prabhupada intended, and if you're not following it, you're against Prabhupada. Is it incumbent on the individual to figure that out, or does he just take the word of his superiors for granted? Once again, it's not a political question. I'm not going to quote you anywhere. I just want to know the truth.
Well, again, this is the kind of thing that becomes problematic, and I don't think there's going to be a socio-political solution to this problem. So we're barking up the wrong tree if we're looking for that. The only solution that the Shastra gives is that whatever the Mahajana orders, you have to do that. That means, implicitly, that you have to select a Mahajana who is present. Now, and that's not going to happen for every member of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, because we're never going to agree about who that Mahajana is. Therefore, factionalization. It would be naive, in my opinion, to deny that ISKCON has already factionalized. And so it may not be politically or legally factionalized, but ideologically, certainly it's so. That's natural. It's always been that way. There is an eternal order that cannot be disturbed. Nothing is new. There is innate structure within the universe. This is theism. And something contrary to this is atheism. That there's no structure, everything is, you know, chaotic, and you can't order anything. And, you know, the reality is already there. It's not something that we create, which is why I asked you in the beginning. What is natural is eternal. And, you know, something that we create is unnatural. So we have to connect with the reality that is pre-existing, and that reality has a name in Sanskrit literature. It's called ritam. Rita has come to mean now truth, but in its original Vedic usage, it means this vast order that organizes the coursing of all energies within the cosmic manifestation. It later became known as Dharma, but it's an eternal system. That's why we find even back in the Rig Veda, Brahmanosya mahamasi bahurajanyakrata uru tadasya yadvaishyaha patyagam shutro jayata. This analogy that Prabhupada, we hear from Prabhupada, the Brahmanas are the head, the Kshatriyas are the arms, the Vaishyas are the belly, the Shudras are the legs. This is an eternal system. And, you know, it's all of its manifestations also, they're eternal. But it manifests in different ways according to different time, places, and circumstances. It's really the person that we accept as an acharya can arbit meaning in a given time, place, and circumstance. Just like meaning is not coming from a dictionary. This is my job, I translate. So I have to know what does a word mean. And through experience, I've seen meaning does not come from dictionaries. Because lexicographers themselves have to refer to previous authorities in order to justify what they're writing down as a definition. So it comes from the Mahajanas. Mahajana yinagata sapanta. That is the path. It's a big topic. In case there's any other questions I can ask, otherwise this thing can go on for a long time. Is there any other question or no? I think it's late now, so one more question. Last one. Well, I don't have all of it with me. I just scribbled down a quick note. He writes that this verse is you know, dealing with the... He quotes this verse that Prabhupada also quotes, that, you know, rinam kritva kritam pibet, somehow or other get ghee and enjoy life. He's quoting that verse, and I don't remember exactly what else he said, but I could look it up if you're losing sleep about it. Is that okay? Okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.